It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that is why I'm on goddamn Windows 10 now. I don't know if, because they always had ways out, you know, there was all, you could X out of the screen or no thanks or whatever. I must have either hit something wrong or like there was a thing that wasn't like that, because I just turned on my computer one morning and it said, hello, welcome to Windows 10. So, then I've been stuck with it and I really hated it. Now I'm getting okay with it, except I feel I've had a couple of instances recently where, you know, like when your network is bad, like your Wi-Fi is screwed up, this computer acts as though that's going on, but everything else is still fine. And it's just happened a few times, and I don't know what's caused it or anything, but it's all been since I upgraded, and so I'm kind of annoyed. I keep looking for hidden settings or something that's off. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the magical talking hat at gmail.com. Wow.
Did you do that for reals?
I super did that for reals. That's hilarious. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast that's also its email address. God, that is funny. That's just how it rolls off the tongue. Huh. The Magical Talking Hat at gmail.com.
That's pretty weird.
It's kind of like when you talk for a while and I find myself going, and then gives up. It's just reflex. Alright, I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 272.
272. Mm-hmm. Goodness, yes. And the first one being recorded on a laptop with Windows 10. So, huzzah for that.
Yep, that's just great.
So it's been 2 weeks since you and I have gotten together.
Mm-hmm.
It has been a very eventful 2 weeks for me, I think.
Well, why don't you tell us all about it? Because it has not been all that event.
Not so much for you?
No. Not really. I mean, there's stuff that's been going on, obviously, but nothing of interest to our listeners, I'm sure.
I am going to pick a sort of random order for this. Maybe the order of excitement is probably what it is. So, I'm going to start with, did you notice anything walking up? Well, there are two possible things. Did you notice anything different walking up to our house today?
No.
Wow, you missed two of them. One of them is that there is a second baby shoe.
Oh, is there?
Yes.
I don't think I've ever actually seen the first baby shoe.
When you leave, check it out.
Okay.
We've talked about that
about the first baby shoe.
Yes.
But I don't think I've ever seen it. I don't think I've ever noticed it.
So Trish and I come back from something. I'm driving. I get out of the car. I turn. She's looking in the tree, the little bowl hole in the tree. She likes to see, like, if water's collecting or whatever. So she's facing that way. So she's not even looking at me. I look and I see, still dangling, the little Nike shoe, the black and yellow Nike baby shoe hanging from our lamppost. But hanging from it is a little baby red Chuck Taylor high top. So again, a high-end baby shoe. Like, both of these, I'm sure, cost more than all of my shoes I had as a child together. And I sit there, and my reaction is, like anyone's would be, whoa, wait, what? And on like that for about 2 minutes.
Because the first baby shoe was put there by you.
Yes, intentionally.
With the suspicion that this shoe you found on the ground, someone walking by must have lost it. Maybe they'd see it, and they'd know it's there.
That was the altruistic vision. Now, if they come by and try and get their shoe, I will punch them for it, because the shoe is too much of a symbol of our house. It draws us too much attention. And also, I really love the idea that somebody's going by thinking that we killed a baby and ate it and hung its shoe out as a warning to others.
And so they hung some other shoe
well,
up there?
Well, this is the thing. So I'm freaking out, like I said, for about 2 minutes straight. Trish, weirdly, is done messing in the bowl, but she's not turning around. And then she moves just enough, I see a little bit of her mouth, and I can see it quirking up at the edge. So I know that she knows this already, and has been waiting for me to notice. So she finally turns back around, and she's giggling. And I just looked at her, and I said, "Did you kill a child while I was gone last night?" And she said, "No." I said, "Who put that there?" She said, "Kirk." I said, "Did Kirk kill a child?" And apparently, no. Kirk, as with the other one for me and Trish, found it on the street.
Oh. Huh.
Not near anyone else or any, like, one-shoed babies or anything. So apparently, rich babies like to cruise our block and involve themselves in some sort of activity that is active enough to lose a shoe.
High risk for shoe
some,
loss.
Some sort yeah. of thing like that. As Trish pointed out, babies prefer not to have shoes.
That is true.
So it could be something cool, but the point is something very involved. But it's like a Fight Club thing. Like only the rich babies know about it. Rich Baby Shoe Fight Club. Oh my God, that would I want it to be that.
It's not going
to
be
that. I want it to be Rich Baby Fight Club, and you fight for shoes, but like you just take one as a trophy, so you just throw the other away. And that baby has to go home in those little cute white socks. Oh my God. Baby Shoe Fight Club. Oh, I love that idea. Wow. So, haven't even gotten to any of the things that happened, really. That was the offhand one.
Of course, you didn't really talk about how all this works. You usually do that.
There was the... Oh, shit. I am super out of practice.
I mean, it's fine with me if you don't... you always you do that every show, and that's fine.
Yeah, here's how this works, people who are listening brand new. Still find that idea hilarious. I'm like, yeah. Somebody's like, what have I found? This podcast... No, that doesn't matter. We just have our diehards. Yeah. Our hard hats.
Yep.
So, here's what it is. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, which coincidentally is the title of the show, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Now I was going to throw in the third one, too. people like yourselves mostly like coffee now. Other people catch up. Write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them, which manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its e-cigarette servants, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. Now, back to where we were.
Sure.
The other thing that's different out there is we got a new car. We got a new car. We got a new car.
Well, is it the blue, whatchamacallit?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, of course I did notice that because, you know, I had to park in a... I had to take it into account in my parking job, but I didn't necessarily know it was yours.
Yes, it is ours. It is ours. It is a 2015 Nissan Rogue. It's really less than a year old. It was made in July of 2015.
That's a pretty new car for you guys.
It has 5,000 miles on it. It's still under frickin' warranty. In fact, the warranty, because it's certified pre-owned, they actually extend the powertrain warranty back further, so it's technically got a better warranty than we would have gotten buying a new one. Mm. It is the newest car I have ever owned, including the cars my parents owned growing up, by 12 years. Mm. It's nicer than any other thing we own, including our house. It's amazing. It's got the little screen, like in yours. It's got the little screen and the XM radio, which after 3 months we'll lose, but whatever. dual temperature control. It's got the shit where I could, like, mail you my key, which isn't a key, and as long as you don't leave the city, I could still get into my car. Like, it's amazing. All the cool stuff. The back opens and there's the flat spot, and you can take this bit out so that it's a deeper impression in case you have something taller in there, or you can flip it up so now you have two spaces back there, or you can take it and lift it and stick it in this other thing so now you, like, have shelves in the back of it. It's insane. It's got the USB port. We could plug in our thing. I'm actually excited. Due to travel situations, in a few weeks here, I'm going to be driving by myself to Chicago. Originally, it was going to happen in the Dowager Countess, who's a 2003 with no air conditioning. I was dreading that. Now, I'm actually kind of excited, because I'm just going to plug in my iPod, listen to audiobook for 4 hours while I drive. This car is amazing. I feel like maybe we're not supposed to have it. Like, it's too nice for us.
It's going to be hard to go back.
Very weird. Well, hopefully we won't have to. We'll see. Keep good. Well, we got to make this thing last for a long time. But also, so weird to buy a car. There's not rust on it already. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, it can happen.
Amazing. But still hate car shopping. This was probably my best car buying experience. Still not great. They still messed with us.
Yeah, a little bit.
It was afterwards that I figured out, like, it probably would not have caused us to not buy the car, but there was a thing that I'm like, oh, sort of snuck that through there. So yeah, didn't, which you mean I don't blame the guys in question. I blame the way it's worked. In this case, it was actually specifically a form that was done in such a way that it's like, it, you think one thing and the numbers are actually saying something else. Yeah, so that was not fun, but I love the car. We have not named it yet. All right, what else happened? The book.
Oh, yeah.
The book is coming along. The book is... it's now officially in its longest draft. We passed the previous one.
Okay.
It is not quite 18,000, but more than 17.5, so somewhere in there.
How are you feeling about it?
Pretty good.
Good.
I'm getting a much better picture of the whole thing. But that is still adapting, because I get a picture of, like, the end, but I'm like, but it's not a story arc there, so there's other things. And in fact, because on the way home, the producer is asking me, how far do you think you are in terms of story? And I was thinking about it, and I realized there's a whole, like, arc, practically, that I'm thinking of putting in there, but that I just came up with and was not originally there, so I'm like, that will drastically change the length of the book if I put that in or not. So those kind of things are where I'm at now, because, like, I know how it's going to go, but then there's just spots for pieces. I'm developing a lot of very granular questions, some of which I'll just have to answer, and some of which I think will come out in editing. Like, the latest one is, how detailed do I get in describing a character's outfit?
A specific character, or just characters in general?
Well, that's both of those, and all sorts of that. And I keep thinking back to, like, other books. And in a lot of these situations, especially with a lot of descriptive stuff, my two ends I think of are Dresden Files, because he's very descriptive. And kind of what I model a lot of it after, but I'm not going for that. There are issues with Butcher that I don't want to replicate, so some of it's there. And then, which I guess is sort of my other inspiration also, which is a weird mix, is your stuff, which is very minimalist in a lot of the descriptions. I mean, there are places where, but in general, is not a big thing. And just my constant issue with the idea that no matter how, Dresden Files, Butcher describes characters really detailed. Hair color, like I've talked about before. Breast size, far too much. Things like that. He gets, especially with the women, sort of annoyingly detailed in the description.
Okay.
Still doesn't mean that's what it is in my headcanon.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure in my headcanon, when I'm actually just picturing it in my mind, Harry Dresden is blonde. That is decidedly not true. I'm also pretty sure Karen Murphy is not blonde, which is also not true. Stuff like that. There have been books where, for some reason, in my head, I see it animated instead of just people. Like,
oh,
it,
okay.
It varies all over the place, regardless of how descriptive they were. So that's a thing I want to factor in. I'm like, how much does it matter? And how much do I want to leave it open and stuff? And I am trying to hit certain things. I'm trying to avoid too much with regard to build, because I want to avoid hitting any body image notes, basically.
Yeah, right.
But at the same time, I'm not going to ever just be like, it was a 5'8" brunette who came, like, you know. I want, there still needs to be, for the sake of establishing little character bits and stuff.
Sure, like that.
So that's the kind of thing I'm playing around with. I've noticed the parts that come easier to me and that feel like more like this is a thing and this won't get cut out and stuff like that, is frequently the dialogue. And at this point, so much of the dialogue is between the same two characters.
Is that bad?
I feel like it is. I feel like I need more characters, and I also need more time spent with different characters. That was always my strength GMing, too. The games they like were when I came up with a whole bunch of interesting NPCs for them to interact with. And that's what people like about a lot of urban fantasy, like Dresden Files. They like that there's this huge cast of characters. The stuff from Charles DeLint, the whatever, he has a city, a fictitious city that he uses for a lot of his urban fantasy stuff. Same thing. It's all sorts of different characters. I need to try and incorporate that sort of thing. And I've got other characters. But I feel like, yeah, I need more of that. Which is too bad. I really like my two characters. They fit really well together and they interact well. But I think I need to branch out from that a little bit. Wow, I'm really going tonight, aren't I?
Yeah.
Phew. I thought there was something else in there. Tomorrow night, some of us are going to go celebrate Trish's birthday.
Oh, okay.
At Busta. And probably take a cab there, so nobody has to be a designated driver. Her actual birthday is on Tuesday, but... You know, long weekend, we thought it was a good time to do that. I've seen a ton of movies. Have you seen any movies?
Nope. We've been watching a really good documentary on streaming on Netflix. It's a CNN series of documentaries about the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
Called The 60s.
I was going to say, I remember that.
They have one called The 70s that we're going to watch. And
what's the 70s one about?
You're really funny, but it's really good. I recommend it to anyone who gets Netflix streaming.
There was a competing thing like that, another documentary series VH1 did called I Love the 80s, I believe was the first one. Compelling stuff. So I would recommend that to people.
Were there some films you wanted to talk about? Did you finally
Yes, there see? Were three I wanted to talk about.
Did you finally see Civil War?
I did see Civil War.
Okay.
You still have not seen Civil War.
No, I did see it.
Oh, you did see it.
And you didn't see it.
So then we didn't talk that's about right. it, and that's why I didn't think so. Okay, now I've seen it.
Okay.
So now we can talk about it. What did you think?
Oh, I liked it a lot, and, I barely think of Captain America as a Marvel character, because he was created long before Marvel existed. He's a golden age character, and I love how Marvel treats him like a golden age character, which is weird. Marvel does this, and it's really successful, and people like it, but somehow DC can't do that with their characters, but whatever. So there was a Captain America TV show when I was a kid. So, you know, when I think of the superheroes I liked when I was a kid, it's mostly DC characters, but then Captain America gets thrown in there because he had a TV show. And sometimes Spider-Man gets thrown in there because he was in the newspapers. But anyway, so...
I are going to disagree on this movie in so many ways.
I was excited to see the movie. I liked it. And I felt like This should totally humiliate and embarrass DC. They should see this movie and be embarrassed about what Batman versus Superman was. And as I thought would happen, Batman versus Superman did not reach the $1 billion mark like they thought they would. This movie did in 2 weekends. It was the top movie 2 weekends in a row. And this wasn't, even though it had a lot of people in it besides Captain America, it was not technically an Avengers movie. And yet, I mean...
See, whereas I go, even though it was technically a Captain America movie, it was really an Avengers movie.
But still, you know, to me, Warner Brothers should, I mean, this should be a total black eye. And I really hope they see it that way, because they need to do something different. And, you know, you've heard reports since Civil War came out and was so successful, you've heard reports that Warner Brothers is shaking things up and they've decided to make the DC movie thing its own division, and Geoff Johns is going to lead it, although I don't have a lot of confidence in Geoff Johns anyway. But I mean, nobody's been fired, and there hasn't been some new direction announced, but they are shuffling things around over there, because I think they do generally see that even though Batman versus Superman made over $800 million, it was not what they wanted it to be. And in comparison to Civil War, it looks especially bad. So I kind of hope that they do feel that way about it, so maybe they'll do something different with their movies. But yeah, I thought it was fine. I mean, we saw it in Des Moines with my sister. She really liked it. I think my brother Scott liked it. I mean, I don't really have anything really to say about it. It was fun. It was enjoyable. I mean, it wasn't perfect or anything, but I'd say of all the Marvel movies I've watched, for me, the first Iron Man movie is still the best one. And it didn't quite reach that. But, you know, I'd say it was better than most of them, in my opinion. But, I mean, is there something more specific you want me to say?
I'm just waiting for you to stop.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Say whatever it is you want to say about it.
I kept thinking you were wrapping up a couple times there. Right. I did not like it.
At all?
No, I wouldn't say that. Okay. It was fine, but it's probably on the lower end of my Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. And for some fairly just specific reasons, like one or two things that, you know, they're big things, but it's like, but they're specific. And the biggest one, I couldn't really get this point across really well. And then somebody who was debating it with me paraphrased me, and I'm like, that's perfect. Here's my opinion. I believe that superhero movies, I'm not going to say comics, whole different thing, superhero movies, and possibly to a degree superhero TV shows, but probably not, superhero movies definitely, are, at least in the hands of the people who are making them now, are incapable of handling any moral ambiguity. They do it super shitty 100% of the time. And consequently, I want all people making superhero movies to stop trying to do moral ambiguity. Show me who. I don't care if there's twists, if a good guy turns out to be a bad guy or whatever, but I don't want you to try the, oh, who's right and who's wrong shit, because you suck at it. And I thought they sucked at it here, too. And I want them to stop it.
So what do you mean they sucked at it?
I mean, it was the whole moral play was really... Well, okay, here's a big one, because I've been debating this with some people. In your opinion, who do you think the movie thought was right and who was wrong between Tony and Steve?
Who the movie thought?
Yes.
Oh, I have no idea. I was barely even invested in that aspect of it. For one thing, I didn't feel like it was a moral question. I thought it was a sort of a political question. And, you know, and Tony had his reasons for his political stance, and Cap had his reasons for his political stance. I suppose.
Yeah, but I don't feel like they treated it that way at all.
Treated what way?
I think... Okay, maybe we're in a different camp. I'm of the opinion that this is a movie about when the superheroes accidentally kill somebody, huge pressures try and force them to register themselves as under the wing of the UN, and the Avengers end up being split over whether they should do that or not, and that is the inherent conflict of the film.
Right, which to me it seems like a political question. Not a moral question.
Absolutely, and I believe that the movie isn't saying that. I believe the movie's totally making it a moral thing.
They are?
Given at the end we're literally beating each other to death over the issue, yes.
But people beat each other to death over political issues all the time.
Not in dramatic one-on-one movie scenes. You don't have one where you're tossing back quips about each other and trying to cut each other down and guilt you about your old relationship when it's just, this is what the politics is.
Oh, so you're saying, like, the whole thing about, like, that's in the preview about, you know, he's my friend and so was I.
Yeah. Well, and...
Although
I feel like you're out on a limb mostly by yourself on this one. People are going to say this movie is about what's right and what's wrong, well, what the ethics are involved.
I'm pretty much always out on a limb by myself. I think we can assume that. But I'm just telling you how I saw it, that's all.
Yeah.
It didn't sink in as a moral question or a moral fight.
I always find this weird. If you were to say to me, I thought they didn't, well, which is what I'm saying, I thought they did a shit job of trying to make it a moral question, and in reality it is a political question, but that's not what they were going for, then I listen to you. But if you say, it didn't even, like, occur to me in this movie that so hard was pushing the moral angle.
No, but it didn't. I mean, okay, so what you're pointing out about it being personal, but, I mean, what happens on Facebook? You know, people who have different political perspectives who are friends for ages might unfriend each other on Facebook over this stuff because it does become personal. But it still isn't ever moral. I mean, I suppose maybe they think it is, and that's why
they're
being...
absolutely do. Maybe that's what it is. Is that they absolutely do, and the people in this movie, well, the characters in this movie, absolutely did. We had way too many brooding soliloquies about right and wrong for that to not be the case.
Boy, I just can't even remember... That just didn't even sink in for me.
Wow. But what bugs me is we're doing it this way, and we're making this a big thing of, like, oh, we don't have to deal with, this is very speculative, what would you do with superheroes? You know, is it okay to let them decide for themselves, or is that vigilantism? And I'm like, this is not a new fictitious problem. We have this constantly. Ours are with drones. Ours are with guerrilla fighters. Mm-hmm. Like,
sure.
We constantly have this. People are doing things. There's collateral damage. Some people freak out. Some people say it's necessary. And depending on who has the most power, they win. Or we keep yelling about it, but nothing really changes. I'm like, there's nothing special about this conflict. And they treat this like, oh, this is weird, exciting new ground. It's not.
I totally agree with you on that. There definitely was a point in the film where it seems like the film wanted you to think that, oh, if we had superheroes, here's a problem we'd have to deal with.
Yeah.
But this is a problem we have to deal with even without superheroes.
Which actually brings me to my corollary for the idea. The reason that I don't feel that superhero movies can do moral ambiguity is I think if you legitimately deal with moral ambiguity in superhero movies, what you get is Watchmen. Watchmen the graphic novel, not Watchmen the movie. That thing is terrible. And I'm not saying that's not awesome, but you can't make every superhero movie be The Watchmen. That's kind of dark and depressing.
Yeah, right.
And to me, The Watchmen is what you get when you actually look at the moral ambiguity associated with superheroes and what they do and what they are.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, right at the beginning of the film, there's this, you know, and you see this in the preview, so it's not a spoiler. They're talking about, you know, they say this place where all these destruction happened and this place where all this destruction happened. And all I could think of while he was talking about that was, yeah, I get the impression that the film wants you to sort of imagine how this would be a novel situation if there were superheroes. But this is everywhere. This is everything.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it happens all the time.
And it always is a question that drives me crazy.
But then
anyway,
I just ignored it from that point forward.
Well, except in my opinion, that's totally what the movie is about.
Well, it's, again, to me, it's about that premise as weak as it was, you know, then it led to, well, should the people who are doing this work report to the UN, I guess, or whatever, some world body or not? And then that immediately became this very specific political question, which, again, is not new. I mean, you know, we...
No, and at least to me, not interesting. Because that's what it is. They show all these things about how many casualties there are. Yep. And I'm like, so you're blaming them. But or like there's a scene where one of the superheroes is confronted with the identity of a specific casualty that happened in a big fight. That mm-hmm. I won't give you any details about anything, but somebody's confronted with that. And I'm like, did it never cross anybody's mind that the response could have been, I am so sorry your child died, I should have not been involved, then he'd be alive, and this other million people would be dead.
Right?
Please forgive me for saving their lives. Yeah, yeah. And I'm not saying it's as simple as that. What I'm saying is it's clearly not as simple as the other
side.
No,
that's right. That's right. And I agree. I also didn't think that whole aspect of it was particularly interesting or whatever. But for whatever reason, it didn't bother me. I just, you know, I just went on with it. And I just sort of accepted that Tony wanted to do things one way, and I know Cap wanted to do things another way, and it wasn't a way where it was constructed in such a way that if Cap and his group didn't agree, well, they might, you know, get arrested, get apprehended, and I was willing to just sort of go along with that and then let the whole, as you say, hijinks ensue from there, so that none of that really bothered me. But I guess I didn't really think about...
See, and that's what I'm getting, and I get this with other people with superhero movies, except in your version, I think it's, I was focused on this shiny thing in this corner, whereas with a lot of people, they're like, I just turned my brain off, and it was pretty fun. And I'm like, I get that, I frequently can't do that. But, because the last big thing, and this one, without being spoilery, I'll say, this will be more enlightening to people who've seen the movie. But... another reason I was unhappy is I am sick to death of revenge stories. Specifically, avenging deaths. In anything. And I'll tell you why. Because nobody's ever fucking Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. Although, to be fair, he also is not like that. Because how many motherfucking guards did he kill on the way there?
Yeah.
And this is the thing. So, this does not happen in the movie. I'm going to make this perfectly hypothetical, but it's a great one. So let's say during the Avengers thing, my wife and family died. And then I did an elaborate plot to kill who I blamed for that. In any of these kind of movies, I also would have blown up like an entire embassy and killed 60 completely unrelated people as part of my plan. Mm-hmm. And somehow I still feel righteous.
Mm.
I hate it. It's so stupid. And the only real answer, well, the one answer is those people are just so myopic and horrible that they make the Kardashians look like freaking Gandhi. Which is just gets hard to believe. It's not a believable person at that point. Or, the easy go-to, they're insane. I'm like, great. So, the whole thing, insane people just make these great plans that can thwart superheroes a lot. Like, I just get really tired of that. So, yeah, that wears on me. But it seems like, especially in superhero movies nowadays, my brain is just constantly saying... the little tiny lines that would have resolved hours worth of things. And I don't mean, like, knowledge I have that they don't. I'm like, if you were just in that scene, if you had just added that bit of description or, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
I do that a lot, too.
And the more I have to do that, the more I'm like, this is dumb.
I mean, you know, all the criticisms that you're mentioning are perfectly valid, and I noticed... just about all that stuff too, but I really didn't have anything invested in it.
Yeah.
Well,
and honestly, me neither. I haven't been. There's certain branches of the MCU that I don't care so much about, and with each iteration, that becomes true of the Captain America one. Well, I really liked the first. I did not particularly like Winter Soldier. And this one, I have major issues with. There are a couple of other really big reasons I did not like Civil War, but they are spoilerific, so I cannot talk about them here. But remind me to tell you. I will say this. And you saw bits of it in trailers and stuff. There is a fight scene in the middle of the movie at an airport where the superheroes with Iron Man fight the superheroes with Captain America, and it is pretty fucking cool.
Yeah,
it is a good scene, and it has some great dialogue. And I should add this, hesitant, but still, I kind of love this Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's good.
Like, I'm no longer dreading the fact that I'm going to have to see another Spider-Man movie. And yeah. I'm very serious about that. I was sitting here going, God damn it. I want to keep it all in there, so I'm going to see it, but I really am sick of Spider-Man movies. Now I'm like, with him, this could be fun.
The introductory scene was really good.
That was good. Most of his stuff, they wrote really well for him, too, but it's just very... I think that's it. I like the actor fine, but I also feel like they're doing a version of Spider-Man that is better and also less annoying to me. I don't want to say it's more accurate, because I think some of the stuff that I hate about Spider-Man is inherent to Spider-Man, and so they may not be doing him a service that way. But for me, it's great. I'm like, this is a kid that I don't constantly want to punch in the face. Okay, two other movies, except I keep forgetting what one of them is. I wonder what that movie is. All right. But the other big one is Trish and I saw Ex Machina. You know this movie?
I heard of it, yeah.
Yeah. It was very popular. And I don't know why. I just didn't feel like I was interested.
Is Scarlett Johansson in it?
No. You saw that one.
No.
Well, you told me all about that one.
Well,
that's called it Under the Skin.
I saw that. Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Ex Machina. Scarlett Johansson is not
it. Who isn't it?
Nobody that you know, actually, except
the reason I'm asking
the redheaded kid from About Time.
The reason I'm asking is because I thought this was one of those movies that they whitewashed. They cast a character, a Caucasian character, in a part that in the original material was not, or something.
I don't think there is original material for this. So
never mind that. Something else. I'm thinking of something
else. No, this is, as I saw it from the materials and stuff, was a science fiction thriller. Depending on what you saw, it almost looked like it was science fiction horror. But not like horror, really. And I don't know. I didn't even look into what it was really about that much. It's just something about it didn't really do it for me, even though it was getting great reviews. And so we watched it, and it's, the movie is about a young man, a young programmer who works for a company that's basically a Google analog. It's some company where some guy invented a search engine. So it's sort of Google. And he wins this sweepstakes in the company to go spend a week with the CEO and founder.
Oh, this is the movie with Katie Lotz in it.
Maybe.
Yeah, talked about this movie when I saw it.
Oh, did you?
Yep.
I
forgot it was called that.
Yeah. I don't remember. What did you think?
Oh, I liked it a lot.
Okay. Yeah, so he goes to visit this guy for a week. And it turns out this guy has a secret project that he wants the guy to be involved in, involving artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And hijinks ensue from there. At the time, when we finished watching it, I was like, I didn't really like it. It was okay, but it wasn't great. But then, like, I keep thinking about it. And I don't keep thinking about Civil War. here's what I think I've decided. I think it is very poor science fiction for certain reasons. But I think it is a very good psychological thriller. I think the sci-fi, I get that it's limited and it's just supposed to be speculative sci-fi, but I still think it's too muddled with a lot of issues. Weirdly, issues that are actually brought up in the movie to make it decent sort of sci-fi. But as just sort of a weird cerebral psychodrama, I find it interesting. Because it's one of those great psychodramas where just, like, from moment one, you know things aren't what they appear and something's wrong, and you're just constantly waiting for the twist or whatever. But it never goes where I expected it to, and it goes to some weird places.
Well, I thought Katie Lotz did a really good job.
Did she play Ava?
Yeah.
Okay.
She's in another... other people might recognize her from things like Arrow. She's been in Arrow. Okay. She's in Legends of Tomorrow. But, we just thought her performance was really good. Now, that probably...
It was. There were good performances all around, I'd say.
Sure, sure. But, I mean, the scientist is someone. I forget who it is, though.
I think he is somebody, but I don't remember who it is. Yeah. And then the employee, the protagonist, is... He was the lead in that About Time movie I talked about that was okay. The weird... romantic comedy time travel thing.
But yeah, his boss is somebody. I mean, like, if I said the
right.
name, people
he's got a big old beard on, so it's harder to tell, but I think you're right.
But anyway, Katie Lotz did such an excellent job. I think we probably overlooked some of the flaws that you're talking about, because I don't remember any.
But, the performance is amazing. Just the filmmaking is amazing. Their location, I don't know what the hell that is, but it's awesome. And it's really indicative of House on the Rock in weird ways. Hmm. Trish and I were both like, does that look like House on the Rock? We're like, yeah, it does. It's like the next generation House on the Rock. The acting was incredible. The special effects were absolutely breathtaking.
I guess if
they do some weird cyborg special effects that are absolutely like nothing I've ever seen.
I guess if someone were to ask me, is this good, is this good artificial intelligence sci-fi? I don't know why I would say this, but I'd probably say it's probably not up there. Like, I mean, if someone were to ask, hey, can you recommend some good AI sci-fi? I don't know if I would say this one. So I think you're right. I think when I was done watching it, I thought, as AI sci-fi, this wasn't great. But like you said, as a thriller, it was pretty good.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, and don't get me wrong. I'm glad it is sci-fi, and the effects were cool, and the story works fine.
Yeah.
But, in your head, picture this, so replace the AI thing with just a person. You would have to adjust story elements, but you could make a very similar story. It's a little Silence of the Lambs, you make it a criminal or something in there. You could make a very similar story, and it could be just as good, and it would essentially be the same story.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot about... I mean, we do use the whole use AI to explore the human condition thing, but that's what it is largely about. It's a lot about human motives and human perceptions and things like that. So I feel like if the fact that I think you could do it almost as well, if not equally as well, without the AI component is probably a sign that it's not good AI sci-fi.
Yeah, I mean, the whole premise sort of pivots around the Turing test.
Yes, that's how their plot works, is that he's doing essentially a Turing test. Although we're using it as a label. He's certainly not doing anything that's like recognizable as a Turing test specifically.
Well, and that's probably what makes it not very compelling as science fiction, because if you're watching it and if you're someone who's studied this a little bit or given a lot of thought to it, he doesn't often behave toward this thing the way you would expect an AI researcher or someone who's supposed to be who he is. He doesn't do what you would expect that person would do.
Yeah.
But the Turing test aspect of it is critical to how it ends and how you perceive the ending, but it's not executed in a very...
No, although some of the dialogue between the two guys is quite interesting, like, speak to that. Yeah, so clearly somebody sort of researched it, but yeah, they sort of went for drama instead, which is fine because it's a great drama. So I think I would recommend it, but at the same time, like, I didn't, it's weird for me to say I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
We like, and I think part of it is it has incredibly realistic characters. Like, I certainly don't fault the characterization, but some of the characters are really, I really didn't like them. Like, it bothered me to watch them on the screen kind of thing. And I definitely would say there are horror elements.
Yeah,
aren't particularly jump scares. There is blood. I would not say there's a lot of gore, per se. It gets very dark. But otherwise, you know, I think it's good to go.
Yeah, we liked it. I remember when I talked about it before, I recommended it for people to watch.
I remember what the third movie is, and luckily I don't have a lot to say. I just want to put this out there to recommend for certain people. Okay, it is a film. You can find it on Amazon Instant Video. It is called Mystics of Bali. It is from 1981, although I'm pretty sure it filmed maybe even a few years earlier, and it may have taken some time to get there, because it's very 70s vibe. So, I don't remember the name of the creature, and they don't use the name in this movie, but in Balinese mythology, there is a folklore creature that is a woman's head with all the entrails dragging behind it.
Okay.
This is a real thing, and it's something where, like, yeah, they look, in the daytime, they look normal, and then their head comes off, and it's a really weird, and I think they go and they eat the fetuses out of pregnant women or something. It's really fucked up, but my point is, it's a genuine thing in Balinese mythology.
Okay.
It's not a crazy horror movie premise. But in Mystics of Bali, it's used as a crazy horror movie premise. Mm. But it was made in the 70s. I think it was filmed in Bali. And it was clearly filmed not in English, but it has since been dubbed over in English.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hilarious. It is ripe for Mystery Science Theater. Like, it is the voice actors doing the overdubbing have such weird choices with their characters. It's weird to have this demonic writhing person in this huge makeup getup that they're supposed to be really demonic and freaky, and they're talking about something, and they're talking to somebody about, you know, getting their soul or whatever, and the person responds, and the first thing they say is, "All right," and then just pause for like 2 seconds before they go on. I'm like, this feels very much like a Seinfeld episode or something. Like, and I think it was probably pacing. Like, in the native language, it paced outright, but sure, to put things in, because they definitely tried to map it enough that when they were talking, you heard voices, and when they weren't, you didn't.
Right, right.
But it's hilarious. And the special effects are pretty robust, but still hilariously awful. So much fake head on zipline. It's amazing. Like, at the end, when you're like, what was the point of this movie? Like, there's weird romantic stuff that is, I mean, there's no, it's not sexually explicit, but they have a romantic plot line that is, makes no, like, the whole, you spend most of the movie not sure what their relationship is to each other, because in certain scenes it's like they just met, but then they very casually just like kiss each other on the neck and stuff, just like hanging out. It's very weird. So yeah, so if you're into the weird, fucked up old movies, and that's the thing. This is not my usual shit. There's not gratuitous nudity, sex, blood, gore, whatever. No, this is just, if you like the old Mystery Science Theater type movies, check out Mystics in Bali. It's hilarious. Even Trish got into it. She happened to be in the room, and I was like, normally I don't watch them in front of her, but I'm like, this one seems pretty tame, so I did it. She was cracking up. So check that out. All right, now we got like 10 minutes, so we should probably draw a thing.
Okay, we'll draw a thing.
Why? I'm sitting here like, you're going to hand it to me. I'm like, why would you give that to me? All right, you should probably then read it.
It's from Azure Talon.
Azure Talon, Azure Talon, Azure Talon.
Hat Tongues.
Whoa, I both am repulsed and intrigued by that appellation.
Any interest in guest hosting anime review podcast Tuning Japanese? I owe you a guest appearance. If so, Azure Talon.
No, you owe us a guest appearance in the hospital when we get cancer. So this won't qualify.
What,
no.
I don't know what he's talking about.
It appears that he has some juice with some sort of podcast called Tuning Japanese about anime reviews. And he wonders if either or both of us is interested in guest hosting said show, because he feels he owes us a guest host spot because we put him on our show after I gave him cancer.
Oh. Now I get it.
Yes. Tuning Japanese is a terrible name, because Tuning Japanese is a play on words for Turning Japanese.
Yes.
Which was the title of a song based on the phrase, which is a slang term for masturbation.
I didn't know that.
Yes. It is an old racist term for masturbation, because the whole idea is supposedly that you would squint while you were doing such things, and therefore
are you
look
making
Asian.
This up?
I wish I was. This does sound like something I would make up. No, this is a real thing.
Where did
and
you
if
even
you
hear
listen
this?
To I, the first time, I mean, there have been various sources. I think it might have started my parents got me one of those Our Bodies Ourselves kind of books, and it included like slang terms for stuff just so you would know. And I think it was on the masturbation list.
Really?
Yeah. But I've run into other places. But here's the thing, too. If you listen to the song Turning Japanese, which I love that song, by the way, but if you actually listen to the lyrics, it's like Shebop and whatever. It's very double entendre-y, but you can tell. Yeah. What's going to be hilarious is if they don't know that and named their show. So to me, this would be like, this is very explicitly an American review of sexually explicit anime. That's why you would name a show that. And I suspect that is not actually the case. But anyway, would you be interested? Given now you know the history of the name.
That really wouldn't... I don't know if that would have an impact on it or not. The thing is, I don't feel qualified to review... I'm not an expert or a particular fan of animation from Japan, so...
Given the shit you feel qualified to review on this show, I don't know.
What do you mean?
I mean, I don't know. You're qualified to review the Marvel movies...
Yeah, because I watched them, and I'm a comic book fan. And
I have thought about this, and they'd probably make us watch whatever specific ones we were supposed to review in the episode, and that sounds like work.
Well, but see, that it seems to me that, you know, and you know, I'm a filmmaker myself and all this stuff, but it seems to me if you're going to review, you know, Japanese animation, that it shouldn't just be a person... Just a random person watches it and tells you what they think, because, in my experience, Japanese animation it's got a definite cultural flavor to it. And if you don't get it, you're not going to get it. You know what I'm saying? Your review,
absolutely.
The people who hear your review are probably mostly going to be people who actually are connoisseurs of such things, and they're going to be able to tell right away that you're not. So your review is going to mean nothing to them, no matter what it says.
And I believe that a tremendous number of these review podcasts are random people who watch a thing and tell you what they think.
Are you sure about that? Because my impression is...
I am absolutely not sure. Okay. I have not petitioned any of these people or taken any surveys.
I'm just saying that most of these people they're fans of this thing, so they know a little bit about, you know, the aesthetic... So that they're qualified a little bit in how to comment on it.
I suspect Azure Talon would still be happy to have you. I do like anime. Probably none of the stuff you would review on that show, though, because I tend to either go for really weird, obscure stuff, or far more commonly, pornographic stuff. So unless I was right about the Tuning Japanese name and why you picked it, I'm probably not much of an expert either. However, despite that, I'd still could give it a shot. But I don't want to do effort. So, Tell me what's involved, and if it's not too hard, I might. But I'm not making any promises. I like anime. I was into it when I was a kid. But as I've talked about before, I was into Japan as a kid a lot, so then I got into anime. I don't know which came first.
Well, I mean, I've seen a lot of animation from Japanese studios that I've liked, or, you know, movies or whatever. But I don't think I'm a person that can fully appreciate the aesthetic to a degree where I'd be a qualified reviewer specifically of that kind of thing.
I was just thinking the other day, it's been too long since I've seen My Neighbor Totoro. You've seen that, right?
Nope.
Studio Ghibli? Miyazaki? Oh my god, you would like it, I think.
Maybe.
Most of the stuff you like is probably Miyazaki, I'm guessing. Spirited Away, House Moving Castle. Most of the stuff I've
seen is that, yeah. Okay. Right, I've seen that.
Totoro is decidedly a children's film from him, and it's wonderful. It's very cute and whimsical, but it's very nice. Yeah, and I haven't seen it too long. See, maybe I'll make you watch it. Then you have to see it. Oh! In the last couple of minutes here, I also beat Fallout 4.
Oh, you made a decision, huh?
Yep. Yeah, no, I totally did. They're Fallout games. You do, eventually. That's how they work.
I don't think my wife's going to.
No, but I mean, what I'm saying is, this is the kind of thing I expected when I started the game.
Okay.
This tends to be how Fallout games work, is you pick a side, and usually some or all of the other sides must be destroyed. And this part, they want it to be a difficult choice. They always want it to be a hard choice. But yeah, this one was really... Like, they tried to play it differently, but it's really bleak. It's kind of surprising. And it's also really low-key. Like, there was just a small... little soliloquy for me for a few seconds, and then we're back. No credits or anything, and we're just back, and now everybody's just walking around. That felt really weird.
What did you decide to do?
I went with the railroad. Originally, I was going to go with the Minutemen, but I was so mad at the Brotherhood. So I went with the railroad so I could handle everything. And I have not played Far Harbor yet. I have it. But I'm really kind of burned out, so I switched over to a game that I got through PlayStation Plus called Tropico 5, and it's pretty awesome. It is a strategy game. It's in the vein of SimCity or, you know, games like Civilization games, but the theme for it is you are the dictator of a small tropical island nation. And so there are a lot of tropes around that, which means it's a little problematic and not too little racist. But it's very fun. I'm really enjoying that. And I'm just going sort of crazy with it. Like, when I feel like it, I just completely flip the political agenda. It's like, no, we're socialist and things like that, just to see what'll happen. And what happens is rebels come out of the jungle and kill you. But so I'm having fun with that. My plan is when I get sick of that, then I will go back and play Far Harbor.
Yeah, we're playing Far Harbor.
I figured I saw her the other day, and I was like, oh my god, she's back to messing with her settlements. And then I suddenly was like, oh wait, she's probably playing the new stuff.
Yeah.
How is it so far?
Well, it's, you know, it's good. It's just more Fallout, really.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the game as a whole, you talked about the end being bleak or whatever. I've talked about this before. The game is this particular version of Fallout is...
I should warn you, you got like 2 minutes.
...is pretty joyless, you know? I mean, it's not... Fallout is always kind of campy and funny and goofy in a lot of ways for being a post-apocalyptic thing.
And this has some of it, but you're right. There's a definite more...
Yeah, this... No, this is all...
Sad
this
vibe.
Is, yeah, this is all apocalypse, no fun. Which doesn't make it bad, but it just... I just think that's kind of interesting how they took that turn... It's still very popular and fun to play, but it's not as jokey and silly as the other games.
When they were breaking into, what, at the beginning of Civil War, somebody's like breaking through into some dark, scary place, or maybe it was a trailer for a movie beforehand. But somebody was going in there. Oh, they opened the vault. And I turned to Ben, who also plays the Fallout games, and I went, Gary, Gary.
Yeah, that was great, Gary.
Apparently there is a reference to Gary in Fallout 4.
There was.
I didn't encounter it, but he told me about
it. Yeah, I don't remember it now.
Because he went over it. It's a place where there's some blocks that's in one of the vaults that spell out Gary.
Yeah, something like that.
Anyway. I also went to a 12-year-old surprise birthday party. That was pretty fun.
Oh.
I hadn't seen him in a while. His hair is a very different color now. It's pretty cool. Okay, people, we are out of time. So, and as he just showed up, too late. But now, we are going to end this. So, you should go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and talk about stuff there. Also, you can go there if you don't have my personal email address, and you are interested in editing my book when I get a draft done, because I might want your help as an editor. But I won't pay you, so fuck off. Also, like us on Facebook. Also, listen next week. Also, be good to yourselves and each other.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.